powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Before I even dive on into our Seahawks conversation today, getting started, previewing you guys for Wild Card Weekend, home game against the Rams, I do have to let you know our stream up on 710sports.com. Jacob Heaps wearing what he's calling his bad boy leather jacket. Yeah. Jacob
Tyler Heaps. I called that when I'm in trouble.
Wearing his leather jacket that he promised Curtis he actually owned, and we didn't believe you momentarily for a minute there, but it's true. It's true. Leather jacket. It's happening. So congratulations, Jake. I thought it would be a Letterman's jacket, but you surprise us every day.
I do have one of those. But it's collected dust.
Well, did you letter for academia? Because let me tell you what.
No,
did.
I didn't.
Okay.
I got second team all Big 12 academics.
Well,
all academic team, but does that count?
Is Paul Gallant on this show? There's a lot of high school reminiscing going on.
Okay. I'm moving on. You know what, you guys? We do calls usually every Monday after a Seahawks game. It's always really fun. There are so many good points. And something happened yesterday, which is we had a listener, Ron, our friend Ron, called in from Polesbo, and he brought up a really good point. And I actually want to get back to it because we ended up taking the call so late, we didn't have a ton of time. But I think this is hugely, hugely important. And that's this. The Seahawks have given fans plenty of reasons for optimism, but Ron, and I'm assuming many others, are worried about those slow starts, which have given the Seahawks some early exits from the playoffs. How many games have we watched where that's happened? A lot of them. In fact, that point actually prompted Curtis Rogers to go back and look up first half scores in every single one of the Seahawks playoff games since Super Bowl 49. I'm going to go ahead and read them off. 2019, in the first half against Green Bay, 3 points. First half against Philly, 10 points. First half against Dallas, 6 points. Against Atlanta, 10. Detroit, 10. Carolina, 0. Minnesota, 0. That goes in reverse chronological order. So most recent, obviously, 3 points against Green Bay. And that hasn't just been something in the playoffs, Jake. We know that this is part of a competitive mindset Pete Carroll has. And we've seen that in recent games. So the first quarter scores in the last 5 games, San Francisco 3, LA 0, Washington 3, New York 3, Philadelphia 0. That's gross. Look at the first quarter games in the first 5 games. Minnesota's included here with 0, but they took advantage of some second half turnovers. So I'll take that one off. Atlanta. 14, first quarter, 14 against Atlanta, 7 against New England, 9 against Dallas, 10 against Miami. I mean, starting quickly is also a key to success. Don't listen, Pete Carroll. I love the competitive mindset that Pete Carroll preaches about playing throughout, finishing the game, winning in the fourth quarter. You're never out of it. I think it's brilliant. I think it's a wonderful philosophy to have for your program. But I worry, Jake, and I wonder if Ron and some other fans are worried about this. I worry that there is a point when that competitive mentality crosses over from just being a great philosophy and then just becomes hubris.
And it's a great point. And it's a fear that everyone has, that you have such a slow start that it puts you in too big of a hole that you cannot come back from. It's a legitimate fear that I have personally. Now, when you look at those types of games, Carolina back in, what was that, 2015? They were down 35-0 and almost come back. Against the Green Bay Packers this last year, they were down 3 scores. They almost come back. This offense has firepower and has a unique ability to come roaring back. If they are down 2 scores, I don't worry. I don't fret, because I believe that they have a unique ability to bounce back and to be able to come back. Is it a position that I like to be in? No, not at all. And the key here is that when you play playoff football and you play against some of these really good offenses, they're going to win too, right? This dynamic run that this Seahawks defense has been on, as good as they have been, you will not shut out Drew Brees. You will not shut out Aaron Rodgers. You will not hold them to under 15 points. And if you do, my goodness, this is a turnaround of the century. And with that being said, you are going to have to start faster. But what does that look like? Do they need to score 10 points in the first quarter? They need to score 14 points in the first quarter? No, I don't believe so. But they do need to keep pace by halftime. And to me, that's got to be the key. Stacey, you know what's back? You know what's back? It's the good old rope-a-dope.
The McRib.
No, not the McRib. Not, what'd you say, 80s fashion, 90s
gross
fashion?
Gross 90s fashion.
Well, I did see that Brooke was telling me that crimped hair is back. Apparently, that's a thing.
All right, well, what's that, Jake?
The rope-a-dope's back. From 2019, from this last season, if you remember, Carroll playing the good old rope-a-dope. And here in cut number two, Pete Carroll feeling comfortable in this for the very simple fact that he's not scared about the offense because offenses around the league are slowing down this time of the year.
The offenses or the defense is improving. What we have witnessed in our own team, we've seen this get so much better on defense. And I'm sure that, look, we went right through our division, you know, here near the end. And then Washington, who was really loaded up too. So it's been hard. It's just been really challenging. And we've worked really hard to not get desperate and not, you know, take shots where we don't need to try to force the issue and make sure that we did the things that you need to do to win. And that's continuing to find the balance that we need and also take care of the football. And that's, these teams are, they're explosive teams, and they'll take the ball off you in a heartbeat if you give them a chance. And Russ did a fantastic job of not letting that happen.
So a big reason why the Seahawks have played or have played the way they have on offense is because they played against very good defenses. And with the way this Seahawks defense has played and as good as they played, Pete Carroll is more than comfortable playing in a low-scoring game. He's okay saying, look, I would rather make sure that we protect the ball, that we're conservative on offense, because we know our defense is going to take care of business. And that doesn't mean that he doesn't want to score 20 to 30 points. It means that if it comes down to it, if making a risky throw could lead to an interception or just holding on to the ball and living for another series, he would rather live for the other series because he feels like they will get another opportunity at it. And I can see that in the way Russell Wilson has played over the last few weeks. I can see it, particularly this last week. His intention to protect the ball was very clear in his decision-making, oftentimes when he was throwing the ball away in this last game. And, Stacey, this isn't something that is just we throw out there and it's a nice little storyline to kind of combat this offensive. It's legit. Pro Football Focus, mathematician here, PFF underscore Moo. He's data science is his job for Pro Football Focus. Put out an interesting graph here, and I'll tweet it out here for everybody else to see on my timeline. But Russell Wilson in 2020, weeks 1 through 17, had the fourth hardest strength of schedule for quarterbacks, meaning facing opposing pass defenses. So the fourth hardest schedule in 2020. You know where Aaron Rodgers ranks? He was the fifth easiest. Do you know where Drew Brees ranks?
Middle
he
of the
was
road?
The 12th easiest. So when you talk about these teams and what they've gone through, they haven't played legitimate playoff football yet. They haven't played against legitimate playoff teams, playoff caliber defenses, and this offense has for Seattle. And so do I like the way that they played this last week and how static they were for the first three quarters of the game? No, and that's not going to help you win ball games. You're not going to be able to consistently do that, play that way to win games. But what I do believe is I think that they are more ready, more seasoned, more tested than anybody else. And once they get into these playoff matchups, they will be more comfortable in these styles of games than Green Bay, than New Orleans. And obviously, the one that happens right now is the one that's most important against the Rams. That is why they are playing this current style. They are playing to win and advance. And that is the recipe that has been required over the last 3 weeks in particular.
It absolutely has. And I think that that's completely fair. And I am not expecting them to jump out to some crazy lead and play the kind of offense people are longing to see against the Rams. I think you are going to see an extension of the last 5 weeks that you've already been seeing, especially the last 3 weeks against top defenses, which is don't make a mistake, let them make a mistake. I think that what I look at, though, is that game against the Buffalo Bills. What happens when you play a good offense with a pretty good defense? What happens is that if you wait too long for the other team to make a mistake, chances are, if they're really good, they probably won't. Or they won't make enough. Or they're going to take advantage of each and every one of your mistakes, which is exactly what Buffalo did. And Seattle was able to score against Buffalo even more in the last three quarters than they did in the first, but it wasn't enough. Because even though they got a minimum of 10 points in the second, third, and fourth quarters against the Bills, it just it couldn't compete with how efficient and effective the Bills' offense was. So you're playing a game of catch-up without any margin of error. I think that you have a bigger margin of error against the Rams. I think that that conservative style is fair against the Rams. Because I don't think that Wolford's going to throw for, gosh, knock on wood right now, which I'm doing, 400 yards against you, right? Like, this, he should not be able to go into your stadium, your home stadium, and beat you. You cannot have that. You have to have a mentality that you will not allow that to happen. What happens when, let's say, the way I'm predicting the playoffs will shake out is the Seahawks get through the first round and then go to face Drew Brees. You're playing another great defense. It's not number one. It's not number two. But they're, I think, the first or second best passing defense in the league. They're still really solid. And they've got Alvin Kamara. Maybe they have Thomas back. I mean, they've got a great offense, too, that's scoring 29 points per game.
But what I would say to that is that this team is completely different from when they played Buffalo. I mean, Russell Wilson turning the ball over allowed Buffalo to score 44 points. This defense was, I mean, that's the most points ever given up by Pete Carroll. That was the lowest of the low in terms of what this defense was in terms of this season and for Pete Carroll's entire tenure here as a defensive coach. That was an embarrassing performance. Mm-hmm. That doesn't happen again. But to your point, do they put themselves in a hole that they cannot come
waiting,
back from?
Does playing too conservatively early happen again? Because that's something that outside of that Bills game has happened in many other games.
As long as the game is in range. If you're going in 6-6 at halftime, I think that this team is more comfortable doing that than any other team. Now, if you get yourself in a hole where you're, let's say, for example, Stacey, what happened against the 49ers, and this is where I think this really gets put to the test in terms of Pete Carroll's philosophy. In the second quarter, you are down in the low red zone against the 49ers. You are driving. You put together a great drive. And on third and three, you miss, and you have a fourth down opportunity. You go and score there. It puts this game in an entirely different position. Pete Carroll elects to go and kick the field goal. Does he do that versus the Saints? Does he do that versus Green Bay? I think that those types of decisions ultimately could impact the type of hole that they get put in, the deficit that they go and get put in. Because the way that they're able to play against the Rams and the 49ers, they're able to kick the field goal in that moment and feel confident that their defense can hold, and you get another opportunity, and you can play and outlast your opponent. Against quarterbacks like Drew Brees and Aaron Rodgers, I will be curious to see what Pete Carroll decides to do in those types of moments, because those types of decisions, Stacey, I think could be the difference. If you elect to go for a field goal in that situation and Green Bay goes down and scores the very next possession, that can be the difference. So I think, again, coming back to that mindset, over the last 3 weeks, we have seen Pete Carroll be very comfortable playing rope-a-dope. He has been very comfortable outlasting the opponent, been able to take the body blows of another team, knowing that, hey, you've got Russell Wilson as your quarterback who can land the knockout punch at any given moment. That gives you a lot of confidence to be able to play that way, and especially with the way your defense is playing. But to your point, when you play teams, and that is assuming they survive in advance this week, that when you play better offenses, what do you do? What's your strategy? How do you manage the game? I think that that is obviously going to be a fear for everyone. This team has to start faster, no question. And in regards to this particular game against the Rams, I think a touchdown in the first half makes a huge difference. It changes the complexion of this game. I think, you know, it is a win for the Rams if they're able to go into halftime tied up with you. It gives them confidence. And so I personally would love to see the Seahawks in this offense be able to start faster, but it's not because I'm concerned that they're going to put themselves in too big of a hole. I think that they have to keep things within range and that this team is different, that this defense is different. And I believe that this defense is different. And I don't think that they're going to hold Green Bay and New Orleans to below 20 points. But I also don't think that New Orleans and Green Bay is going to run this team out of the gym either. I don't think that, to my point, Aaron Rodgers has had the fifth easiest strength of schedule in terms of pass defenses that he has gone against. He has not played legit playoff football on a consistent basis this season, and I think that that can serve the Seahawks well when they come up and potentially play them if they're lucky to get to that point, because that would be the NFC Championship.
Time for three questions brought to you by Tila Mortgage.
It's time for three questions.
Can't wait for it.
Every day at 11:15, three burning questions for Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
That's the dumbest question you could ask. What?
Guys, it's been a minute since a wild card team has made the Super Bowl. In fact, it was the 2012 Ravens the last to do it. So which team in each conference has the best shot at changing that this year?
I do believe that the Seattle Seahawks have the best opportunity to change that. Some may look at the Buccaneers, and it may very well could be them, because I think that the Buccaneers are the matchup, much like the 49ers were to Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers. Tampa Bay has the ability to pressure the quarterback in a way that it would not be comfortable for Aaron Rodgers. But I think the Seahawks could very much be that team on the NFC side. Now, you look at the AFC side, the team that I think has the best chance to make some noise, I really do think it's the Tennessee Titans. I would like to say the Baltimore Ravens, because their offense has really turned a corner over the last few weeks. They have really started to run the ball. But the difference is I haven't seen Lamar Jackson on a consistent basis. He did it once this year against Cleveland on Monday night, but I have not seen him consistently be able to bring his team back under a deficit, and I think that that's really, really important when you're playing the playoffs. I think Tennessee has an offense that can.
In order of wild cards most to least likely, I think in the AFC side, I'm going to give it to the Ravens. They had, if I'm correct on this one, I need to double check. I think did they have one of the better? They had the best point differential in the league at plus 165. So I'll give it to the Ravens as the wild card most likely to advance in the Super Bowl. Unfortunately for them, their conference is far more competitive. I think that championship game is between KC and Buffalo. On the NFC side, I gotta go with the Buccaneers. I think there are weaknesses to each wild card team with the Bears, Rams, and Bucks, but there are also weaknesses and flaws with each division winner that they can take advantage. I think that the Buccaneers just get an easier road with their first round being against Washington. Unfortunately for them, if they win, in all likelihood, they have to beat Aaron Rodgers to get by him. So it doesn't become much easier for them to get to the championship after this round, but I think of those three teams, they're the most likely.
Number two.
ESPN insider, NBA insider Brian Windhorst reporting this morning that the NBA expansion fees will likely be in the neighborhood of $2.5 billion. That would be for likely two teams the NBA would expand by. What are your initial thoughts on that price tag?
I think it's highly suspicious, Curtis. Can you tell me $2.5 billion when an NBA team or the NBA in general is apparently in tremendous debt? They're in $100 million deficit in terms of revenue lost. Are they in debt, or did they just lose revenue, Curtis? Because that's the question that I have for myself. How can a team be valued at $2.5 billion if it's debt that they have to overcome? Or is it just the fact that they just lost some revenue in this league and these NBA teams are doing just fine? Which is it?
Well, I think we all know the answer to
that.
I don't think it's that difficult to figure that one out.
Oh, okay. So the NBA is not in trouble. It's not in dire straits. So, yeah, I think it's incredible that the NBA expansion team is listed at $2.5 billion, and yet all we have heard about is how bad the NBA is in financial situations. Amazing how the owners can make themselves look like, gosh, poor us. Poor us.
Yeah, I'm looking at this NBC Sports article saying Forbes valued 7 NBA teams worth at least that much, though certainly not the majority of teams. I don't know that I have any. I am so desperate for a team to be back in Seattle that this could be more than that, and that price tag wouldn't give me, I don't want to say sticker shock, it's $2.5 billion, but I wouldn't feel hesitant.
It's not your
money.
Like
it's not my money, but also they've been so hesitant to commit to any kind of expansion that I'm not surprised by that. So I'm not worried about that.
Number 3.
Some Mariner prospect news, if that's your thing. Julio Rodriguez ranking higher than Jared Kelnick on Baseball America's 2021 Top 10 Mariners prospects list. Baseball America, the gold standard of prospect evaluation. Of the two, which one are you more excited for?
Of the two, who am I more excited for? I personally, I think Julio Rodriguez is the guy that I think I'll just really, really like. I think just everything that I have heard about him, he's a great kid, super, super talented. But I believe the guy that the Mariners need and the one that I'm most excited for is Jared Kelnick. I really think that his personality, the way that he approaches the game, you need a bulldog in that locker room, in that clubhouse. And I really believe that when you look at Kelnick, he provides that. And he may ruffle some feathers along the way, but I would like to, in honor of the leather jacket today, Stacey, I'd like to have a little bit of a bad boy in that clubhouse who's playing hard every single day, who brings a ton of bravado, not in a negative way, but in a positive way to this club. I think it needs this, you know, infusion of energy and confidence, and I think that's what Kelnick can bring.
And then the next pitch was just a fastball that I reacted, and I got the head out, and smell you later.
Smell you later.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong.
Give me more.
Curtis, was Rodriguez ranked ahead of Kelnick in the last prospect rankings?
He was not.
Okay.
Which is odd, because Rodriguez really didn't play at all last year.
Yeah.
He broke his wrist in summer camp. Yeah.
I am personally more excited about Julio Rodriguez. I don't know why. But I am very excited for the personality Kelnick is going to bring the team, right? It's exactly like Jake said. It's the guy other teams hate, but fans love to have on their team. It's that Richard Sherman-type personality. It is a personality that a lot of winning teams have, too. A guy with confidence, a guy that makes noise. So I'm excited for that, but I am most curious to see Rodriguez. If you missed the show, don't forget you can listen to it via the 710 Sports app powered by Dubin Law Group. We've been talking about the Seahawks' slow starts this morning, whether or not that will be their early exit from the playoffs or whether or not it's the right mentality. We'll ask Mike Salk about it next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross.
Joining us right now is Mike Salk, brought to you by Jafco Plumbing and Sewer. Mike, I have a lot I want to talk to you about when it comes to the Seahawks.
Let's go.
Wild card weekend. Before I get to any of that, something far more important to me I need to address, which is Joe Judge. Curtis, do we have the sound of what Joe Judge had to say about Sunday night's game?
To disrespect the effort that everyone put forward to make this season a success for the National Football League, to disrespect the game by going out there and not competing for 60 minutes and doing everything you can to help those players win, we will never do that as long as I'm the head coach of the New York Giants.
The Giants, Mike, a team that has always respected and honored the game of football with their play. I'm wondering how you would feel this morning as a Giants fan.
Well, look, Joe Judge is like any number of politicians who know they have a base that they're talking to. Joe Judge isn't talking to you. He's not talking to me. He's not talking to people around the country. He doesn't care. Joe Judge is talking to two groups of people. His players, many of whom were mad about what happened, and that's obviously his number one most important group. That's his constituency, is his players. And number two, he's talking to Giants fans. And all of them are eating this up with a spoon. They think it's great. They're mad at the Eagles. They're mad at Doug Peterson. They're mad that Nate Sudfeld exists in an NFL game that mattered to them. They're mad that they went, you know, 6-10 instead of 7-9 or better. So I have no problem with Joe Judge saying what he's saying. I have no problems with Doug Peterson doing what he did. They're both doing what was best for their teams. What I think is great is the entire fan bases of all four NFC East teams eating themselves. I think it's great. The blue-blooded, obnoxious NFC East crammed down our throats year after year. Oh, the NFC East. Excuse me, the Giants are going to be left out after going 6-10. It's obnoxious. It's the most obnoxious division in all of sports.
We're having a national conversation about awful teams. A 6-win team is bad. It's not in the postseason.
It's great.
It's wonderful.
As I said, you just wait. They will change the playoff format for teams like the Giants. Eventually, the Yankees will go like 75-87 or whatever it is, and won't make the playoffs, of course, and they'll change the rules in baseball to make sure the Yankees get in. It's obnoxious.
The overall win percentage of the New York Giants, 375.
Yeah.
And you're mad that you didn't get in the playoffs? Like, and people were upset, and yesterday I said that this was absolutely ludicrous. This whole story is just ludicrous. It blows my mind.
You should be happy, man. New York Giants fans are mad. That's great. That's all they want. They just want to be mad, and they are. It's good.
And if the Eagles were winless, Jake pointed this out yesterday, if the Eagles were winless, no one would be saying anything. It would be like, yeah, tank. Jake was like, we were just applauding the Jets.
Yeah, they dropped three spots, right? They went from ninth pick to sixth.
Yes.
I mean, that's absolutely worth their time, and they did it. And, yeah, I have no issues with what Doug Peterson did at all. None. Zero zip zilch. I don't. Playing smart football.
I agree. I don't have an issue with it either, and I don't think that he was tanking either. I really don't. But
he was kind of tanking. He put Nate Sudfeld in the game.
Maybe, but it's not like Jalen Hurts was lighting it up either.
No, but come on. If you are trying to win that game, you're going to see if Jalen Hurts can go back out there and use his wheels or something.
No, they needed to see what they had with Sudfeld.
A normal functional franchise would absolutely do that. You are right. But I don't think the Eagles are a normal functional franchise at this stage.
There's no way they thought that Nate Sudfeld gave them a better chance to win the game. If that's the case, then he should be fired on spot.
Yeah, and I think that there could be grounds for that. I wouldn't be surprised if that did happen.
This guy coached them to a Super Bowl 2 years ago. There's no way he legitimately thought that Nate Sudfeld gave them a better chance to win. He's given themselves a better pick next year, and I applaud him for it. Good job.
It's kind of what Chris Long was hinting at.
Yeah.
Former Eagle. He was saying, like, if I don't think that Doug Peterson made this choice.
No. And that may be true, too. Absolutely.
Let's talk about the Seahawks. Jake and I were both talking about slow starts for this team. I worry that it transitions from a competitive mentality and philosophy that is fantastic, you're never out of it, slowly into just hubris.
Or into complacency of like, we can wait and wait and wait.
For another team, you're going to outwait and you're going to wait for Aaron Rodgers and the Packers, the number one seed, to make a mistake.
Yeah, I don't worry about that. And I understand the point of view. Brock and I spent some time on it today on the podcast. NFL games have their own distinct personalities. They're all different from one another, except they, for the most part, have one thing in common, which is they tend to get close at the end. And it comes down to a couple of really big plays that each team has to make. Not every game, but for the most part, I think we see that trend. And, you know, some games are high scoring, back and forth. Some games are low scoring and ugly and messy and turnover. Like, Pete's comfortable in any type of game, and I think that's what has made the Seahawks so effective. I'm unbelievably bullish on the Seahawks right now. I am so excited about the way their defense is playing. They have Russell Wilson in his prime and a defense that is playing their best ball in half a decade. This is the best the defense plays since 2015, and because of it, I think this is the best Seahawks team since 2015. Maybe since 2014. Because they weren't coming off of the Super Bowl loss and all of the garbage surrounding it. Look, this defense isn't Legion of Boom good. I don't want to get carried away. I don't want to exaggerate what they've done. But for the second half of the season, and certainly for the last six games, they've played top five level defense. I'll put them up against anybody in the NFL right now and take my chances. I don't think they're going to come out okay. They're rushing the passer. They're stopping the run. The linebackers are playing incredible. Brock said today that for the last two games, Jordan Brooks has outplayed Bobby Wagner. You think that's true? I was shocked when he said it, but he said it, and I wasn't going to disagree. So
I'm surprised
okay,
he said it.
I know.
Yes, I'm not daring. because he has.
Okay,
in terms of his downhill playmaking ability on the ball at the line of scrimmage, Jordan Brooks has had more of an impact there. Now,
that's a story in and of itself for the future that maybe somebody's going to want to come back to at some point of like, hey, one of those guys is making an awful lot of money and the other guy isn't. So if he's getting outplayed, there's maybe a conversation about where that goes down the road. But you're getting Jamal Adams playing at his level and the cornerback since Reed has gotten in there. Like, gosh, I feel really good at all three levels about what this defense can do. So give me that heading into the playoffs. So much more important than Russell Wilson throwing for a bunch of yards.
So that was, you actually kind of led into my question here, and I want to ask this question outright. With how good you're feeling about this defense, are you worried about Aaron Rodgers and Drew Brees and those two offenses running this defense out of the gym? That this is just a false positive that this defense has been playing better, and that when it comes to playoff time, that this defense is not going to be able to hang with those two guys. Therefore, this offense is putting themselves in a position right now where they're not going to be able to keep up.
Yeah, not really. And by the way, throw Tom Brady in there because he's playing at that level right now. No, I mean, I think they'd have success against, Rodgers scares you because it's going to be in Lambeau, and he's really played that well. That offense has been great this year. But he lost David Bakhtiari last week, and that's his left tackle. And if you're able to add even more pressure to Rodgers, does that change the game? Yes, potentially. Brady's been really good as long as he has time, but when he doesn't have time, he has not been nearly as good, and the Seahawks have had as good a pass rush as anybody has the last few weeks, last half of the season since Carlos Dunlap got here. So, you know, am I worried about Drew Brees lighting you up? Look, the Saints' offense is good, but I'm much more nervous about the Saints' defense than I am about their offense, right? I mean, Brees isn't the same player that he used to be. Still good, don't get me wrong, and I love Drew Brees, but this isn't Drew Brees from 5, 6, 7 years ago. This is a good quarterback, but not necessarily a great one. So, yeah, look, you could lose those games. It's not like the Seahawks are an automatic favorite in any of them, but I'd take my chances with this defense playing the way it is and Russell Wilson and his ability to drive down the field late in the game. Yeah, I'm not that worried about getting boat raced early.
He is Mike Salk. You can hear him every weekday on Jake and Stacey at 11:30. Also on the Brock and Salk podcast, I saw you guys taping today for the new episode dropping tonight.
Yes.
You want to do a quick tease?
Oh, it's a good one.
Okay.
We've got really...
All right, you guys heard it here first. It's a good one.
It's a good one.
You can download it wherever
you
download your podcast. That drops tonight. Thanks, Mike.
See you guys.
Jake and I both agreed on one key to beating the Rams, and thankfully for the Seahawks, they've got the weapons to do it this time around. That's next on Jake and Stacey.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
Don't miss the Seahawks playoff roundtable today from 3 to 4 p.m. on Wyman and Bob. Every weekday during the playoffs, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton are joined by a cast of our NFL experts with an inside look at the Hawks. The Seahawks playoff roundtable daily 3 to 4 p.m. on the home of the Seahawks playoff run, 710 ESPN Seattle. Now, this upcoming wildcard game against the Rams, Seahawks are hosting it at Lumen Field, and it's their third time playing LA this year. Jake, the key to the game the first time, the key to the game the second time, is going to be the key to the game the third time. Can you guess what that is?
Maybe protecting Russell Wilson? Being able to... keep Aaron Donald and Leonard Floyd off of him? I don't know. That might be a good key to the game.
I'm going to say the key is going to be protecting Russell Wilson and keeping Aaron Donald at bay. Now, the Seahawks have successfully been able to do that. Aaron Donald, I believe, has a sack maybe two. He hasn't been overly productive against Seattle this year. That's because they have been paying mind to Aaron Donald. And as a consequence, Leonard Floyd has had 5 sacks against this team, 3 in their first meeting alone and 2 in their second meeting. There is one thing the Seahawks have in their favor, though, Jake, and that's that for first time in what feels like a while, they're getting their full offensive line back. Here's Pete Carroll talking about their health in cut number four.
We're going to be at pretty much full strength this weekend. You know, Brandon Shell will be back and Michael Potty will be back, and this will be, you know, fun to have those guys all back together. But if anybody's got to come out, we're okay. You know, Cedric has done a nice job, and Jay Simmons done a nice job, and so fortunately we've had, you know, real good backup help. The center thing was a little shaky, you know, once we got past Kyle Fuller, you know, D. Lou in there was a bit of a challenge right there, but we survived it, and so we're very fortunate we're going to be back on track full go.
I don't know. I think D-Lou did a pretty okay job there, Jake, but certainly not the guy that you want there regularly because he is your starting right guard. So now the Seahawks will finally have their starting five offensive linemen. From left to right, you're going to have Dwayne Brown, who's been a steady force there. You're getting Mike Iupati back. You're going to have Posick at center. You're going to have your rookie Damian Lewis at right guard. And finally, your right tackle Brandon Shell back. According to Bob Condotta of the Seattle Times, they've had this combination, their initial starting combination, just five times all together at the same time this year. It doesn't feel like they've been absent that many times because the play has been more consistent. And some of your stars, meaning Posick, your starting center, for the most part has been healthy. He missed one game. And Dwayne Brown, I don't think, has missed a single start, but it has made a difference.
Yeah, it certainly has made a difference. And I believe that when you're able to get these guys back and they're able to work together, there's just so much more comfort and chemistry with those guys. I mean, Dwayne Brown and Mike Iupati, they have worked well together in terms of being veterans, being able to communicate, work in terms of, you know, stunts and twists, and also being able to, you know, work in their combinations. And I think having Brandon Shell back really puts Damian Lewis at ease. You can see a difference between the way Damian Lewis plays when Brandon Shell is in and when he is out. And I don't mean Damian Lewis all of a sudden just, you know, falls off a cliff in terms of his production, but you can just see in the way that they're passing things off and in the run blocking and everything else, I think they're just that much more crisp in all of those areas. And it's because it matters. It takes a great deal of trust. It takes a great deal of chemistry to be able to work through a lot of the things that offensive linemen, Stacey, quite frankly, it's a position that people underestimate how difficult it is to play. It's not about brute force. It's not just about brute force. It's also about the smarts and communication and working together that make a great offensive line. So to be able to have these five guys back and healthy for the playoffs is a huge thing. And versus the Rams, it couldn't be a greater blessing. And we'll see how big of a difference it really makes, because at the end of the day, Stacey, Aaron Donald is still one of the best players, not just defensive tackles. He's one of the best players to ever play this game.
Now, the second person we're not talking about, I'm going to go ahead and combine the defensive line as one person, even though I am talking about both Floyd and Donald, is Jalen Ramsey.
Jalen Ramsey, you know, when you look at Jalen Ramsey and what he's been able to do this season, this by far has been his best season yet as a pro. And guess what? In the NFC West, he has had his fair share of covering some of the best receivers in the league multiple times a year. I mean, he's had to go up against DeAndre Hopkins and DK Metcalf four times this season, and he has done an outstanding job in being able to limit those two guys in particular. And you know, when you're able to have a guy like Jalen Ramsey, Stacey, to me, what ends up happening is that defensively, and you're Brandon Staley, and you're looking like one of the league's best and brightest defensive coordinators because you have two of the best defensive players in the game, is you're able to overload your zone coverages. You're able to essentially take one receiver away and feel confident in that, and you can feel confident in that pretty much all game long, and you can overload the numbers. And typically what you try to do as an offense, Stacey, is you try to create 2-on-1. So like in basketball, when you have a fast break, you want a 2-on-1 situation, two offensive players to one defender. And in your route concepts, you want to isolate one defender and put him in a bind. Whatever he does is wrong. He takes this defender, or he takes that offensive player away. Guess what? We got someone else behind him that we're going to make him pay. He can't choose right. And what they're able to do now, and this is what's made it so tough, is they're able to create their numbers advantage over your offensive number advantage. And that's very hard to do with any defense. But because you have such a great corner in Jalen Ramsey, they've been able to do it all season long.
Why haven't the Seahawks been able to do that as effectively with both Lockett and Metcalf? Because one thing that I know I'm shifting gears a little bit, but one thing that was interesting is in the final game of the season, both Metcalf and Lockett set franchise records, one for most yardage and one for most receptions. In that same game, the offense had like 106 yards at the half and gained 3 net yards in the third quarter, the entire third quarter. And it was interesting to see that slow, kind of lethargic majority of the game. And again, Tyler Lockett went off in the fourth quarter and he had 2 fourth quarter touchdowns, but it doesn't feel like they've been able to as effectively make a pick your poison situation with their top two receivers. And I want to throw in like Hollister and Disley and Olsen when he was healthy. I mean, I know they have other guys, but what's kept them from being able to do that?
Well, this is something that the Seahawks finally started doing against the Rams the last time they played them, is that they effectively were able to move DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett in motion and put them in more favorable situations. And I think that that allowed them to be able to capitalize on, you know, some of the things that the Rams defense does or what they try to take away. And so, Stacey, the one thing with Tyler Lockett is, and I want to be very crystal clear about how I say this, is that Tyler isn't like DK in the sense that if you play DK Metcalf man-to-man coverage, there's only one corner in this league that can effectively lock down DK Metcalf. Just from his sheer size and physicality and his speed, DK Metcalf is a man-to-man matchup problem. He is an issue. Tyler Lockett can beat you in man-to-man coverage and make you pay, but there are certain matchups for Tyler that are not in his favor based off of his size and his skill set. And the other area that Tyler does such a great job is really finding the voids in zone coverage. Well, when you start to shift and create numbers advantages, Stacey, with the defense, what ends up happening is that there is no real voids to find. They're able to effectively take that away. And so that's why this Rams defense is a particular hard matchup for the Seahawks, because even though you have two great receivers, they've got answers for both of those receivers. And that is very rare to be able to find across the NFL in the way that they play their defensive scheme. So it is a tremendous challenge for this offensive coaching staff to scheme ways to get these two guys early and easy completions to get them rolling and then to be able to open up the rest of this offense.
That's really good insight. As a reminder to everyone too, just while I think of it, we're going to have a nice in-depth preview for the huddle tomorrow, a Wednesday edition of the normally Thursday huddle. So don't forget that. This hour of Jake and Stacey is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. Coming up, it is hype train time. Urban Meyer is reportedly wanting in just huge sum of money to come out of retirement. Think of a number in your head and add a couple million. That's next.